Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody. And this is the first time we've had AC/DC play us in.
Probably. I haven't kept track of that. I should.
I'm sure someone out there has. I'm sure there's a rabid fan that keeps up with
all of our listeners.
Our intro music.
Probably a lawyer, but this is in a
C&D. Someone who represents some of these groups that we've... Well, we talk over it, so I think that makes it legal.
Sure, sure.
That's what I'm going to go with.
It better be, because we're about to break a whole bunch later on in the show.
Yep. Just got
a little surprise for everybody.
Yeah, some little nuggets of entertainment headed your way.
Nuggets. Speaking of nuggets.
Oh.
An entertainment.
Okay.
Michael and I have been approached. I don't know how to properly talk about this, but we are going to be doing a pregame show this
year.
Yes. In a somewhat official capacity.
On the radio.
So, yeah.
There's...
called up.
I know. I'm not quite sure how much we can say yet or not, but... So, just to be safe, we're going to be a little bit... A little bit vague, not coy on purpose, but we're just, we don't want to say too much and then someone come back and say, oh, hang on.
That wasn't right.
Y'all went a little, that wasn't exact at all what we discussed. Oh, okay.
Oh crap.
Oops. But anyway, that's something to look forward to. So, we'll try to keep y'all updated on where to listen and
when,
what we'll be doing, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
Well, I'm pumped, man.
Pretty good. There's some pretty good perks that come with it. So,
yeah,
we'll keep y'all informed. We'll keep you abreast of the situation.
Abreast. He said breast.
Oh, good Lord.
All right. So we've got plenty of football to talk about this week. We've got some fall camp news. It started this past weekend. We're going to do our honorable mention best wins so far. Honorable mention best wins of the past decade. We may touch on preseason, basically saying Ezekiel Elliott hasn't signed a contract yet.
Oh, NFL preseason?
Oh, sorry. That's about all I know.
Yeah, that's all I know, too. I don't think Dak has either.
Yeah, it's okay.
That may be the end of that segment.
We may have already done it.
That's it.
And then we shall do... We're going to hold off our best wins for our next recording, episode 104, in 2 weeks. So that'll be on the 20th. And then we'll do our pregame preview of the Montana State game on the 27th. So, first, basketball. Did you see this tweet from a student or a Texas Tech fan saying that she was getting married?
I did, and it was... What is she? She tagged Chris or Coach Beard in it.
Mm-hmm. And asked how many retweets to get him to be the officiant at her wedding. I was like, that's a big ask.
It is. Because he responded at first with, I think he just said something, hey, when is your wedding? Just kind of.
He said, hey, congrats, when are you getting married?
Yeah, when are you getting married? Because I guess he was, sitting here in front of the old Google calendar. Going to make sure that I'm not somewhere important. Please don't schedule it the first week of April.
Or the first week
just
of
in case.
Like November.
Yeah. Maybe schedule it a couple weeks after, a couple weeks into April at the earliest.
But no,
as far as spring is concerned.
Yeah, he came back and said, Our first game of the season is Tuesday, November 5th. If the student section is 100% filled with 4,500 students, I will be at your wedding. Here's the best part. And we'll provide Whataburger for everyone there.
That's incredible.
So, Riley Albrecht, I expect an invitation to your wedding.
Well, and that's one of those things where you say, what does a guy do that makes $4 million a year in Lubbock, Texas? They do that. They provide Whataburger to, I don't know, 200 people, however many are going to be coming to that wedding. Yeah, I need 200 number ones, please.
It probably calls in a catering
order. I'm sure there's some sort of catering deal that he would work out. But that would be also kind of beard-esque if he just pulled up in a...
It's like an escalator or something. Like, no. It's SUV or truck. It's like, I need 100 number ones.
He's got like a 97 F-250 and he just pulls up.
Sir,
I'm
going to need you to come around to the front.
So we're going to need to run that card. We're going to need to run that card right now.
I need you to come inside. Yeah, so he's offering water. It's, I don't know. It's a very Chris Beard thing to do. It was really awesome.
The 5th of November, too. I just caught that.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday. Matt Mooney, or as you put it in the notes document, Matt Money.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah.
Freudian slip.
Sure. He and Tariq Owens hosted a basketball camp this past weekend.
They did. And just not this past weekend. It was today and yesterday.
Sorry, yes.
So
the 5th and 6th, August 5th and 6th at the Apex Event Center.
There's a little bit of footage coming out, just kind of, you know, nothing big is really hit. It's not like you would expect there to be some big mob of TV cameras around. But Eric Kelly, who does a good job on the local front, and apologies, Eric, if you happen to be listening. Okay, he's with KMAC. I couldn't remember who he was with, but he's with KMAC here in town. And he posted some pretty cool videos of the camp this week. One of them was Mooney was playing a young lad one-on-one and had successfully gotten to the basket. And then Tariq Owens came out of nowhere and goaltended it out of bounds.
Yes, sir.
But it was just fun to see some highlights, what footage they had of that, and see these guys coming in. And Mooney's apparently going around. I think he's got some camps set up in a couple other towns, and I know it's good for him. I'm sure it brings some money in for him, but it's also good. It's kind of a way of giving back to Lubbock, and I can't remember the name of the town he was at where he played before here. Was it Sioux City?
Yeah, it was in South Dakota somewhere.
But I think he's
or
got
North
a,
Dakota.
Yeah, I know I've got the name of the town wrong. I know the word Sioux is in it. Sorry.
Helpful.
Great reporting.
Yep.
But they have... I know that he's got a camp there as well, so he's kind of making the rounds, and it really is. You're helping out some kids, and I remember going to basketball camps as a kid. And
I never did.
Little Merkle, Texas. And
Merkle, Texas.
I thought it was cool to see the high school varsity coach come out. I mean, I don't know what I would have done if a D1 athlete who'd been to the championship game.
The national title.
A couple
game.
Of them
yeah.
came out and were showing me how to do a bounce pass.
So, Matt.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Finished up his playing in the Summer League with the Atlanta Hawks.
He signed a jersey for that kid that he played one on one.
Nice.
And as far as Eric Kelly reported on Twitter, it's the only Matt Mooney signed Hawks jersey in existence right now. That may change at some point, but right now that's the only one.
But Matt Mooney on his what's next for him, he says, I have some options that I'm talking to my agent about and trying to figure out my next step. I have a couple of teams that have invited me into NBA training camp. If I decide not to do that, I'll go overseas, and I have some offers in Germany and Spain. It looks like leaning towards NBA route, going to camp and make an NBA roster. So it's awesome for him that he's got some options. He's not, you know, kind of relegated to one team, one league. He's like, well, if the offer doesn't come from a NBA team that I like or that I want to do, he can go overseas and play for Germany or Spain, try again. So,
I mean, Justin Gray is still playing overseas. I mean,
so is Jay Crockett.
Yeah.
Who was in town this past weekend as well.
Is Gocher still playing too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you can make a career out of it for sure. Obviously the money's going to be much higher if you land an NBA gig, for the most part. But it's still great that if this is what you want to do, you want to make a living playing basketball, you can.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be quite as glamorous, but for guys that they don't care about that so much. And I could see Mooney being a guy like that just wants to play. And if he gets to play and just focus on that and get to pay rent, then I think that would make everything worthwhile.
Yeah. So,
how about talking basketball in August? This is Lubbock, Texas now. This is Texas Tech. We get to talk basketball in August.
This is new to me.
Yep, me too. I'm all for it, though.
All right. Are we ready for some football?
Yeah, I'm ready for some football.
Maybe. Maybe we're ready for some football. Maybe.
Waiting.
There it is.
They go four up top. They throw the fade to Vasher. Caught. Touchdown.
With time. Delivered.
Hand off. DeMarcus Fields. Down the sideline. Touchdown. Red Raiders. 97 yards.
Harrell back to throw. Going deep down the sideline for Robert Johnson.
And he
got it. Touchdown. Red Raiders. Robert Johnson. Touchdown. Red Raiders.
Take a shot to the end zone.
All day to throw. Over the top, Jakeem Grant. Touchdown, Texas Tech.
Second down now. Deep strike. Got the big man. Crabtree. Post play. And touchdown. Red Raiders with a second to go.
Let the scoring begin.
All right. We had to get some official intro music.
We're officially going to talk about football now. In case y'all didn't know.
That's what we're here for, man. I'm pumped.
We've shifted over.
Pumped. All right. Fall camp started this past weekend, ramping up. I think there have been 4 days of practice so far in 4 days. Four practices in 4 days. Seth at Staking the Plains knocking it out of the park with the preseason fall camp coverage. Definitely need to be checking all that out.
Yes, he does a scratch pad kind of update with a non-transcript version of a lot of these question and answer sessions, some press conference type stuff.
The media availabilities.
Yeah, and always has done a great job with it. And he said, he's mentioned this before, but I just like that he points it out every now and then that, you know, as an aside, Wells talks much slower than Cliff Kingsbury, so this is easier to do.
But I think he had some issues today with Kerry Cooks, right?
I would imagine. I listened to that one during lunch, and he had a lot to say in a short amount of time. Unlike me, I can say very little in a long amount of time.
So I think one of the things I wanted to start with was the Texas Tech Media Day that preceded reporting day. So this was last Thursday, I believe. One of the quotes I think that stuck with both of us. Well, there were two things. One, you've got the notes document here, is how we do anything is how we do everything. And the other piece, I think, that ties in with that, Wells was talking about being mentally prepared for games, for situations, and he touched on being the master of things that take no talent.
Yes. I don't know if he mentioned it in that. I know he mentioned
it's been recent.
Yes, it was the, I think, after day one practice.
Yeah, so that mastering things that take no talent, like showing up to meetings, lining up in the right spot.
Yeah.
Those kind of things, when talent is not a part of the equation, you need to be absolutely 100% master of whatever that is.
Well, and that's what he said. These guys are talented. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to work on the other things. And I think it was, the question was in reference, it was something about freshmen.
Mm.
It said, yes. You know, and this is Seth's non-transcript saying that, you know, you need to pay attention to meetings, where to line up, where they are on special teams. That has nothing to do with talent. You have to be able to master the things that take no talent. So he was specifically addressing freshmen, but that can apply to anyone.
Yeah, he also talked about how many freshmen he's anticipating playing. I think I'm not air quoting, I am paraphrasing here. I think he said that he's played 4, 5, 6 freshmen basically every year. You just have to find the right ones that are ready to go, that have put in the work in the off season. So you're not, he doesn't shy away from playing the freshmen. And it may be something where some of these guys are called on because of, it's a shift in philosophy that they didn't have enough guys in one position. Now they need more bodies. And so they have to play freshmen, or mm-hmm. it just could be that the new schemes, whatever, require, I guess the same thing, just require bodies that haven't previously been here.
Yeah.
So there will be probably freshmen playing. I can't remember if he mentioned any specifics yet. But so far in fall camp, I know it's been 4 days. One guy that's received just an unbelievable amount of attention so far has been McLean Mannix. He's an inside receiver. He's a transfer from Nevada, coming back.
Some good highlight videos of him floating around
mm-hmm.
already.
His, again, this is me drinking the Kool-Aid 4 days into fall camp. what I've seen excites me that you've got an inside possession receiver that reminds me of like an Eric Morris or Danny Amendola that just catches everything. And then, yeah, he's not going to like burn anybody with his speed. He's not like a Cam Batson or a Jakeem Grant, but just one of those options over the middle that can snag balls and convert first downs and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's a common theme with, I mean, we've talked about it before with the training regimen and how much weight they've put on and all this kind of stuff. It's mentioned a lot throughout this, all these media availabilities. He mentions this, and even with Mannix, he mentioned that he's trimmed his body down. He's a little bit more lean. And a lot of these guys have, you know, some of them have put on 20 pounds. Some have done, I mean, they mentioned this, but every mm-hmm. coach somehow mentions it somewhere. So that's kind of encouraging to see. I don't remember that being a thing that was, whether it happened as much or not, it didn't seem to be publicized as much. And another thing I noticed with Wells, I feel like, I don't think Kingsbury did this, but correct me if I'm wrong, Wells came out on media day and he had like a 2.5-3 minute prepared kind of, I mean, obviously he wasn't reading from notes or anything, but he just had some stuff he wanted to get out there, some injuries, some, you know, talk
he
about
had a lot of updates.
Yeah. Talk about grad transfers, talk about, I mean, he just about 3 minutes of just him going through kind of this checklist that he wanted to address before questions even started. And I don't remember Kingsbury doing that. I feel like every mm-hmm. time he did anything, he just got out there and said, all right, Don, or whoever, you know, just look to whoever had the first question and just started answering him. I don't think he really gave up much unless someone asked him something. And then even then it was always kind of tough to get anything out.
Yeah, we'll see. So let's talk about some of those notes from reporting day, from the media day.
Yeah.
Wells touched on the 4 grad transfers, Zach McPherson, the cornerback from Penn State, Evan Rambo, the linebacker/safety from California, Armand Shine, the running back from Utah, and RJ Turner, the wide receiver from Louisiana, Lafayette or Monroe? One of those.
I'll check it.
He said all 4 of those are going to be in contention competition for starting time in their positions, which is big things to hear, because you know you need some depth in the secondary, the defensive secondary. So with Zach McPherson helping out there, Evan Rambo also talked about being that hybrid safety linebacker player. Armand Shine comes in probably one of your thinnest position groups at running back, because right now you've got really one contributor that's returning. It's Tajon Henry. And then you've got Sir Roderick Thompson, who redshirted last year after playing in four games. And then you have Shine, basically. You've got those three guys. RJ Turner, obviously, coming in, who'll be on the outside receiver. I think he'll be on the left side, if I remember correctly. Wells also talked about Kosi Eldridge, JUCO linebacker. He said he can play inside and outside, has also gained weight over the summer. Mentioned Jackson Tyner, the Rice walk-on quarterback transfer.
That's right, and he has actually played quite a bit. Maybe not quite a bit, but he's definitely played in some games at Rice.
Yeah, and then this is when he got to the injury updates. He said Terrence Steele and Lonzell Gilmore are going to be limited, especially a lot more in the beginning of the camp. We'll have updates for the media he was talking to specifically towards the end of the month. And he said Lonzell was injured at the end of the spring. Seth Collins will be out an extended amount of time and has been very dedicated, but his collarbone injury has taken quite a time to heal. John Scott obviously has been out since the shooting this past spring.
Right.
And Christian Taylor, he went ahead and mentioned that both those guys are going to be out for the rest of the year. Sterling Galban, which is that inside receiver, freshman, I believe, and Tyler Carr, the transitioning fullback into tight end, have injuries being managed and should be full go relatively quickly. Alante Brown from the signing class, the four-star guy to Chicago, not on campus yet, dealing with eligibility issues. He's expecting an update here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, so he got all that out of the way before anyone even asked him a question.
Yeah, like he just offered that up.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of other notes just from this media availability on Staking the Plains. It is the Texas Tech football scratch pad report day. And then Seth has had day one practice and day two. Let's see, there have been even like a couple today. There was one about the defensive secondary. Yeah. So there was the reporting day, first practice, and now today was secondary shaping up.
One thing I wanted to throw in, I know we don't have time and we don't need to go through all of this, but...
because we got to talk about some football games.
We do, but did you see what he talked to, what he mentioned when he brought up Jack Anderson?
I remember I was watching, it's actually Rob Bro, Carson Robinson, they had media day interviews going on.
Oh, yeah, they were there.
Just student athletes.
That's right.
They mentioned to Jack Anderson that, hey, Wells said that you're going to be cross-training and possibly getting some time at center. Anderson had not heard this yet. He was surprised.
I didn't know that.
He was like, well, if that's where Wells wants to try me out, like, let's do it. I'll do whatever it takes. But I just thought it was really interesting that Wells had offered that up to the media. And that the news hadn't quite trickled down to Jack Anderson. Now, I don't know how much time he'll be playing at center because he's a guard.
Yeah.
But Wells also said you need several guys that can snap the ball.
Yeah, he said Dawson Deaton was going to start there on day one of practice. Will Farrar, of course, and Anderson. But I think one of the most interesting aspects was that Anderson could play all three spots, and he could play tight end and short yardage goal line.
Yeah, and I believe like also on Rob Rose, that wasn't a very quiet whisper.
Do you think he's got a 23 personnel?
Oh, no doubt.
Goal line package where Jack Anderson is one of the three tight ends.
So in Rose and Robinson's interview with Anderson, they talked about him being in a goal line situation. He's like, they need to have a play drawn up for me to catch a touchdown.
Just matter of factly.
And I don't, he didn't reference Travis Bruffy, who caught that touchdown pass at Oklahoma State a couple years ago, but like he had to have been thinking about that. Like another offensive lineman that had a play called for him.
Oh, got to.
So I would love to see Jack Anderson catch a touchdown or score a touchdown out of the 23 personnel formation.
Yeah, check it out on Talk 1340. That's friend of the show, Rob Rowe. That's where he resides. Check out kkam.com. You can see some of their interviews that they had with these guys on Media Day.
So they had a bunch.
Yeah, they had several. We've got Dante Thompson, Travis Coons, Jack Anderson, Xavier Benson. Yeah, McLean Mannix, Eli Howard. I mean, Nick McCann, bunch of guys. They were able to talk to a bunch of these guys. So check them out. RJ Turner.
Mm-hmm.
See what they had to say.
Okay, so preseason, NFL preseason.
Okay.
Let's touch on this really quickly before we move on to honorable mention best wins of the decade. The NFL preseason in earnest gets underway this week, the 8th Thursday, with really just a full slate of games. It looks like everybody's playing Thursday night. Jets, Giants, Colts, Bills, Falcons, Dolphins, Patriots, Lions, Jaguars, Ravens, Redskins, Browns, Titans, Eagles, Texans, Packers, Panthers, Bears, Chargers, Cardinals.
Yes.
I was about to say that so far has been the first one that's interesting because.
Obviously.
Yeah. Broncos, Seahawks is also interesting to me. Buccaneers, Steelers, Vikings, Saints. Buccaneers, Steelers, Vikings, Saints. Those are Friday night, the 9th. And Saturday, Rams, Raiders, Bengals, Ooh. Chiefs. Cowboys 49ers. Yes.
Saturday. Saturday's where it's at. Got the Chiefs and the Cowboys.
Rams
and
Raiders, the Rams. Chiefs, Bengals, Cowboys 49ers. So
I think the Cardinals game, if I remember right, I think that's on NFL Network, which is unfortunate because I do not get that, but I'm totally yes. planning on tuning in because I want to watch at least a few series of Kyler Murray, if indeed he plays, because I think Kingsbury's already back to his old, we'll see who trots out there. I'm pretty sure he answered a question to that.
That was
to that effect this week.
Yeah, so the Cardinals-Chargers game is on NFL Network.
Maybe it'll be streaming on Twitter or something crazy or whatever they do.
It's preseason. Why not?
Who knows?
Friday night, nothing really there. Vikings-Saints.
Yeah, that could be pretty good.
Could be good. And then Saturday, I would watch all three of those games. But two of them are at 7, one's at 8. So
it'd
be a lot of flipping back and forth.
Yeah.
I'll be in Dallas this weekend. My brother is having a baby shower. So we're going to go out there for that, take care of that. And then one last trip before school starts because the little one starts kindergarten next week.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I'm a little scared.
I keep forgetting he's kindergarten age.
Yep.
That's nuts.
All right. Honorable mention, best wins, past decade.
Yep. We thought we'd go chronologically just to kind of...
It makes sense.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we'd start from... And you know, if like we've said before, if there's one missing, there's a very good chance it's probably going to be discussed at length next week when we narrow it down to our top three.
Top three wins each.
Each. So there'll be...
We'll have six.
There'll be six left off this list probably that someone's going to go, well, why didn't you talk about that one? Well, because it deserves a little bit more respect. And also, we did go through the worst losses the last couple of episodes. And
we got some flack for it, too.
Just a little. And I expected it. I think we both did. But the disclaimer always was just, hey, you know, the what is it? What's that? The day's darkest before the dawn.
There you go.
Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. So our thought was always, well, we would end our summer coverage with highlights, good vibes, good positive things heading out that way. So this is what we're doing.
I have a brief confession.
Oh, boy.
Going through the honorable and best wins, sadly, there were fewer games on this list than there were in the worst losses.
This is a fact.
I
almost mathematically.
True. I also had a hard time not finding a bunch of negatives attached to these honorable mention and best wins. Like there's a game and then like a really good game. And then we go on a bad losing streak or like a really fun, exciting win. in the middle of like a 5-7 season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. What we're going for is, at the time of the game, probably a lot less has to do with the impact on the season, but we're going to start in 2009. We're going to start with game number 13, bowl game, Alamo Bowl versus Michigan State.
Bowl games. You remember when we went to those quite a bit?
I remember when we went to good bowl games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So Texas Tech wins this game, obviously, 41-31. This was the Taylor Potts versus Kirk Cousins game.
Yep.
Cousins is still puttering around in the league somehow.
Sheffield came in for a little bit.
He did. He got that spark there in the fourth quarter. Had that Lyle Leon catch where he jumped up and his hips were above the dude's head.
Gosh.
Because he was like a spider.
That was our touchdown play for however many years Lyle Leong started.
Just throw it to Leong.
That was it. That was the touchdown play. And it worked a lot. Kid could jump. It was incredible.
So, and this really not really a surprise, but going back and like watching highlights of some of these games coached by Mike Leach.
Well, this one wasn't.
Well, you get the Mike Leach offense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It just blows my mind that like literally there were like three or four offensive plays because everything you saw was it was a run or there was a halfback screen. There was a wide receiver screen thrown out to the outside receiver who would then run behind either linemen or receivers out there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a swing pass, so like an inside receiver or a running back would run out to the sidelines and throw. So like another screen. There were slants and there was the verticals. There wasn't much else.
No, the formations were all pretty.
It was like, yeah, I'd run the same routes out of different formations, but it was like four verts was in like every other play. It felt like if you were paying attention, like, cause you realize that the receivers have like three options in the play. Like they can break the route in, they can break the route out, or they can just go up the field.
Mm-hmm.
Those back shoulder fades or back shoulder throws, those are on vertical routes that the receiver and quarterback know on a read it's going, you know, it's not going to go deep downfield. It's going to go to the sideline. Anyways, really, really fun game to be at. My brother and I were there.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
Made the trip down to San Antonio for this bowl game. It was a blast. Got to see interim head coach Ruffin McNeil, interim offensive coordinator Lincoln Riley.
Who? Who's just some kid? Some grad assistant kid?
These two guys that had they been retained, I think the trajectory of the next decade would have been quite a bit different.
Yeah, I think so too. It would have for sure been more consistent. I don't know. Don't want to dwell on that too much, but that's why this is such a big win too, is because of what the team faced. I mean, sure, Michigan State was 6-6. Tech came in 8-4.
Michigan State had like a lot of players suspended like the week before because of some fight or something in the dorms. I remember them losing some guys. But so 2009 was also the year that Texas Tech had a pass rush. And Brandon Sharp was just like, he was sick. I think he had like 12 or 13 sacks on the year. And then on the other side, the other defensive end, Daniel Howard.
Yeah.
Was also really good. He had a fumble recovery for a touchdown in a different game. Your secondary was pretty good. Your linebackers, I think you still had Brian Duncan. Or maybe that was 2008 was his last year. But you also had Marlon Williams. It was just like an all-around fun team to watch. Your receivers were led by, in this game, Detron Lewis had 10 catches for 114 yards. Batch had 85 receiving yards. Austin Zuzalek, Lyle Leong, Tremaine Swindle, Eric Stevens, Jacoby Franks, Alex Torres was starting to come up, and Harrison Jeffers.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Jeffers, the running back that never really caught on, even though he was one of your highest-rated running back recruits. He was up there with like that Oregon running back that just destroyed everything that same year. And I'm going to have to look this up. But that 2009 Alamo Bowl was just a lot of fun, one, to be at, but two, to kind of like just wrap up that season. And with the way that the game went, you're like, wow, that you felt pretty good about the performance that Ruffin McNeil and Lincoln Riley had put together.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was 2009.
Yeah, it was a 1-point game heading into the fourth quarter, and Tech scored 2 touchdowns in the fourth to put it away. It was close all game. To only win by 2 scores, sure, you won by 10. It makes it sound like you really, not dominated, but you kind of had it in hand. But you didn't really. And there was just so much other off-the-field issues going on. I remember watching the TV coverage. We were here at the – I had some friends in town, and we went to the Lone Star Oyster Bar.
Nice.
Not the one on South Slide. Not the one on Slide by the mall. So we were there, and I think they were interviewing Craig James and stuff before the game and all that, and it was just – there was just a lot of stuff going on outside of the game of football that was really hard to deal with and just wrestle with. And you had so many people who were extremely angry with the powers that be at the school and – you know, rightfully so in a lot of cases, and it really just kind of divided the fan base for a long time. And there's still a lot of there's some folks out there that are still on that pirate ship that are never gonna walk that plank off. But that was one of the things that resonated with me was, like you said, it was one of our last good bowls.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 9-win season. We haven't
had one of those.
And it's. It was the end of an era, and just kind of a fun game, just in general, just a fun game to watch.
So, really quickly to wrap up that one and talk about Harrison Jeffers and the running back class that year. That was the same year that Mark Ingram came out of high school for Alabama, and then the Oregon running back I was talking about was LaMichael James, who had just ridiculous stats at Oregon when he was there. Give me 2 seconds to pull that up, and I can tell you what he did.
LaMichael James. That was when Oregon was really in their heyday, too.
9, 10, 11. He finished his career in 3 years with 5,082 rushing yards at 6.6 yards per carry, 53 touchdowns.
I'd be interested.
53 rushing touchdowns. He had 4 more receiving touchdowns.
I'd be interested to see what Texas Tech's rushing yardage and touchdowns were during that same era. But we can't do that right now.
I don't think it touches 5,000 yards.
No, right. I don't think so either.
2010. Michael, I'm going to let you take this one because this wouldn't have been on my list.
This one was...
but maybe it should have been, but it wasn't.
I was at this game.
I was too. I think it was your first Wounded Warrior game.
I believe so too. This was in 2010 when the Missouri Tigers came to town. And this was the last time to play them.
And they came to town ranked.
They did. They came.
They were nearly top 10.
Yeah. I tend to remember that they were number 10 on some poll because I thought they were number 10 while we were there. Because I remember sometimes people talked about, well, Tech's never beat a top 10 team. And I think this game was kind of an asterisk because depending on where you looked, they might have been number 10 that week. Regardless, they came in at 7-2. And, you know, Tech ended up winning that one. Taylor Potts.
And they were 4-4.
Oh, they were 4-4?
Sorry. Texas Tech was 4-4 when they hosted the 7-1.
So they were 7-1. Sorry. I hadn't added that L yet. Or I did add the L. I added it too fast. Great. Now my cocky accent sounds really stupid.
Yeah, here we go.
So they came in 7-1, number 12 in the country. And Tech really played well at home. And this was, of course, one of the big first win of Tuberville's mm-hmm. era. And you were kind of thinking, okay, well, maybe this is some stuff we can expect. Blaine Gabbert was on the other side.
Okay, so because you brought him up, let's talk about Gabbert's stats for a second.
Okay.
He completed 12 passes on 30 attempts.
It's not good.
For 95 yards. 0 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. His QBR for the game, in the single digits, 7.8.
Yeah. Well, and this was a game I can't remember. I think Potts was really not playing well. And then they trotted Sheffield out there, and everyone was kind of. And then Sheffield didn't play well either, but no, I think Potts came
QBR
back in.
His QBR was 15.8.
Yeah, Potts came back in and actually finished the game very well, if I remember correctly, because Tech went into halftime. They were down 20-10, which is not crazy. Came out and scored two touchdowns in the third, and that put it away for good because then no one scored in the fourth. It was a full stadium. It was a night game. It just had that atmosphere that you thought, man, I don't know with Leach gone if we'll ever get there again. And it sure felt really good. And I got to be there. One of my friends' families, they buy tickets. Oh, it's on the north 25-yard line or so, about eight rows up. And so there's four tickets there, and he'll vie for them every now and then. And I got to sit in those coveted seats in that game. So that was a ton of fun to be down there that close and really get to experience it. But
just really interesting stats game. Like if you look at the box score, so Missouri rushed for 260 yards, which is not really all that unusual for Texas Tech teams in this era. Only threw for 104. So they finished the day with 364 total yards and 17 points. It's like Texas Tech had kind of a defense that night.
Yeah.
The offense, they had 307 passing yards, 198 rushing yards. You almost had 200 yards on the ground that night. So you finished the day with 505 total yards.
You had four guys throw a pass.
Yeah. Taylor Potts, Stephen Sheffield, Cornelius Douglas threw a pass, Austin Zuzulak threw a pass. Both Cornelius Douglas and Austin Zuzulak finished 0-1 on the day.
And you dominated the time of possession. You doubled them up.
A strange thing for a Texas Tech team, but this was year one under Tommy Tuberville and Neil Brown.
So you're kind of thinking, you know, it was one of those things where you're just, hey.
This doesn't add up. The time of possession shows 24 minutes for Texas Tech and 12 minutes for Missouri.
Yeah, you're right. We're missing something.
Missing 12 minutes, 14 minutes, 24 minutes. You're missing 24 minutes in the game. What is going on with this time of possession?
Yeah, that's a weird time of possession.
Let's throw out the time of possession point.
Maybe we can't hang our hat on that after all. Maybe they just didn't play the fourth quarter. Maybe that's why they didn't score an easy run.
Yeah, they just called the game.
They just called it. They decided that was enough.
No, because I remember like the fans rushing the field for this game.
Oh, yeah, and I remember kind of...
You're like, really,
no, guys? No, that's not... hey, let's not do that right now.
All right, sorry.
But so, I think everyone... it was just kind of a big release. That's why it felt so good, was after all the Leach stuff, and, you know, people still were... They weren't on the Tuberville train, and, of course, I don't know if anybody ever really got on.
I tried
at first because he sounded, I was.
Did you buy into the championships?
Oh, no, I didn't. I don't think he. I remember him saying that. I remember watching that press conference. I streamed it or whatever you did back in 2009 or 2010. And I remember watching it and thinking the thing I liked the most about him was that he was just kind of seemed professional. It was just a different. Just a different,
refreshing change from Mike Leach and his just random off the cuff.
Yeah, and not to say that, because I felt the same way when Kingsbury came in. Oh, man. Kingsbury's more laid back. He seems more genuine. He's really, you know, he really keeps things close to the vest. And then Wells came in and you're like, well, he's really professional. But he tells, he also tells it like it is. Yeah. And he also has a lot of, He doesn't keep things quite as secret, and so you can kind of talk yourself into anybody the next time, and you have to. But that was one of those games that was a lot of fun to experience.
So we've done a Mike Leach era game, although Mike Leach wasn't coaching this game. We've done a single Tommy Tuberville game. The rest, in fact, are Cliff Kingsbury games.
Yes, they are.
We're skipping ahead 3 years, going from 2010 Missouri to 2013. So first up is Kingsbury's first conference game. Hosted TCU early in the season. It was game three.
Yep.
TCU had come into this game 1-1. Texas Tech was 2-0. I remember it was like a 6 o'clock kick. Samantha had to work until 5, so we were rushing. This is the year we had just gotten season tickets.
It was our first Thursday night game too.
Mm-hmm. It was a weeknight game, which is why it mattered that it was right at 6 and not like,
yeah,
like, okay, well, it's 6 o'clock on Saturday, not a big deal. We actually had our own season tickets. The only season we've done this was this year, 2013. We walked into the stadium, like into the section, as Kenny Williams had just scored that first touchdown. So we missed that. The rest of the game, intense back and forth. This was also the year you went back and forth between Baker Mayfield and Davis Webb, the starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Mayfield started this game. Webb finished it. Mayfield went 21 of 40 on the night, 216 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. Webb came in late, like mid fourth quarter. He went 3 for 4 for 77 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions. He threw that last touchdown to Bradley Marquez, which puts you up by the 10 points. No, sorry, you went by 7.
Yeah, yeah, because you hit a field goal with about 3 minutes left.
Yeah, to put you up by 10. DeAndre Washington, I believe this is the game he dropped the ball at the goal line.
I don't know. I can't remember that for sure.
And then, like,
I don't remember the bad stuff about this game very well.
Rolled into the end zone. Nobody recovered it, so they gave the ball back to Texas Tech at the point where he dropped it. But I think the biggest thing was, if this is the same game, was that Kingsbury stopped Washington on the sideline and said, okay, you're just going to have to go score again. And we're like, oh, dude, that's like, if you're going to talk to a running back that celebrated too early and dropped the ball before crossing the goal line, you kind of like that approach. Like, no, it's fine. Let's go score again. Washington does not have any rushing touchdowns in the game, so I don't think he did score that touchdown. There was two receiving touchdowns. One was that Kenny Williams pass I told you about early on in the first quarter, and then Bradley Marquez in the fourth.
Which was just a perfect pass.
It was. He dropped it in over the corner.
I remember Raider Nation during that pass was like, well, Webb's obviously the better better quarterback.
That was an interesting year going back and forth.
Man, it was.
Trying to compare those two.
Because Mayfield had just come off of, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. He had come off a really great showing, I think, in game one against SMU.
Yeah, and they were talking about in that game, he was the first walk-on quarterback to start a season for Division One Power Five school
ever,
and then he just lit up SMU.
Yeah, it was, and you keep telling yourself, well, it's just SMU, like, but he was fantastic that night.
Yeah, so he came to campus like in July, like in the middle of summer.
Yeah, just kind of showed up.
This is the year that Michael Brewer got injured over the summer. Davis Webb got sick and lost a bunch of weight, so it was really just down to like your walk-on quarterback to start the season. You're like, this is not an ideal way to start.
Right.
Mayfield did well. Your defense held Trevon Boykin to just 194 passing yards, 207 total rushing yards from the Frogs. I think the biggest thing is you forced two interceptions from Boykin. One went to J.J. Gaines. The other went to the converted defensive tackle, Jackson Richards.
Hmm.
Who intercepted Boykin on a screen pass, which was just fantastic. I'm going to see if I can pull it up real quick. But that interception, it was in the third quarter, I think. And it really, it stopped TCU from building any momentum because they were driving. They were in Texas Tech territory, and then Richards intercepts it and stops that drive. You kept TCU from really just developing any kind of momentum that night.
Yeah, and of course they kind of did the same thing for us. The Tech really had trouble getting things going. Obviously, when the score's 30 combined points total, there's not a lot of offense going on. But this is, I wanted to read the drive summary for TCU just real quickly. Punt, 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 interception. Punt, punt, end of half, turnover on downs, field goal, punt, interception, field goal missed, rushing TD. They didn't get a rushing touchdown till, was that 4 minutes left in the game,
mm-hmm.
or 5 minutes left, whatever it was. And no, it was 6 minutes. And then their last two possessions were punt and then turnover on down. So, you know, Tech was playing defense too. They had TC was driving on their last possession. There were 40 seconds left. And of course, they're down by 10. So they, you know, they throw an incomplete pass on 4th and 6. And this was at TTU's 28 yard line. So you could even argue that maybe, of course, they had missed a field goal earlier. Maybe mm-hmm. Patterson should have kicked a field goal and then tried for the onside or something like that. But he didn't. And he went for it on 4th and 6, and Tech stopped him. And then that was the game. So that really just led you to think, wow, this Kingsbury guy. And then it was, you know,
because this was part of the 7-0 start.
Right. And TCU came in. Of course, they only won one game and lost one. And I can't remember who they lost to.
But they were ranked.
They were ranked 24, just mm-hmm. barely. They were in there, but they were still a ranked opponent at home, at night, on our first Thursday night game. Kingsbury's first big game, the Fox game.
Yeah, I was about to say, all that stuff. This was a lot of firsts. This was the first appearance of the Fox in the field. It was the first all-gray uniform.
Yep. Oh, yeah, that's right, the gray.
I found the interception if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I'd like to cue it up.
We're going to have a tight fourth quarter here.
Okay, so really quickly, it's 1st and 15 from Texas Tech's 27. Jackson Richards is lined up as the nose tackle, like in the middle, but he like – what do they call that when he like wraps around? Anyways,
swim move?
No,
that's not a swim move.
We're like,
I know what you mean.
Anyways,
TCU trying to get even. Intercepted, picked off. Going the other way is Jackson Richards, a defensive lineman, makes a huge.
So you're
is that Reese Davis?
Yeah. This is also the game where you got the gif where Kingsbury is spinning the ball on his finger and licks his lip in the pregame.
Oh, yeah, because the Palmer.
Yeah.
He was behind. He's behind speaking Palmer. Of Palmer, that's a nice little name drop for later. But
hey, now, don't give it too
Jesse
much away.
Palmer. I couldn't think of his first name to save my life.
All right.
Yeah, there were a lot of gifs that year. I think that was also when he came off the bus. I think he licked his lips off the bus. And then he just was twirling the football behind Palmer. I think yeah. that was all the okay. same day. Everybody was on full Kingsbury watch.
Yep. All right. One more game in 2013, Arizona State in the Holiday Bowl. This is following your 0-5 finish to that season. You go 7-0 and then lose that 38-30 game in Norman that we talked about a couple weeks ago. And then you finish the season in the Holiday Bowl against a fairly highly ranked Arizona State.
16, according 14, to Wiki.
14, according to ESPN.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They were 10-3 coming into this game. You're like, I don't feel good about this. You jumped all over them from the jump.
How are they 10-and? Oh.
Because they played in the Pac-12 championship game. And
that
lost.
Makes sense. I couldn't think of the math there.
You yeah. scored 13 in the first quarter, 14 in the second, 10 in the third. So you scored all 37 of your points, whereas Arizona State 6, 7, 7, and 3.
Yeah, I say that the Alamo Bowl was the last. I mean, I guess the Alamo Bowl's maybe a little bit bigger bowl now than Holiday, but I don't know. Holiday may have been the last really good bowl we were in, and that was enough fuel and enough Kool-Aid to get you thinking and excited for the next 8 months. It really
Which
did.
Led into a 4-8 season.
That was the most positive I have ever been going into a football season.
It's so strange, like the effect this game had on everybody's output. Because like I said, we had just finished that 0-5 stretch.
Yeah.
Like you felt pretty crappy about that. You beat Arizona State by 2 touchdowns in a big bowl game, and you just felt pretty good. Like Davis Webb just looked untouchable. He was so good that night.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, here's our quarterback for the future. He ended up doing pretty well the next few years. But, you know, he went 403 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
He averaged 9.8 yards.
Per attempt.
Per attempt. And so he just really played lights out. We had a lot of guys play well. you know, Washington didn't run the ball as well as we would have probably liked. And I think they tried to run it a little bit more.
You had 28 rushing. No, sorry, that's receiving. You had 34 carries in this game.
But this was a big Amaro game. You had, you know, 8 receptions for 112 yards from Jace Amaro. And Jakeem Grant, of course, 6 for 89. He had 2 TDs. Marquez had a TD. Rodney Hall had a TD. Everybody
Full
was
back.
Everybody was getting a TD. So it was one of those games I don't know if I'd ever been so positive, like I was saying, for an offseason, because then you're talking yourself into, because of the scheduling, oh, well, we've got Texas at home and we've got OU at home in 2014. I mean, man, this, if we carry this over, and, you know, Amaro, I think, was coming back one more year, and of course, Grant's coming back, and all these guys are like, oh, man, this is looking good. Webb's looking good. We had quite the
tumble
a good run
in 2014.
So, but that was a great feeling win, though.
It was. We're not going to talk about any of 2014. You had 4 wins. 2 of those were against Central Arkansas and UTEP. I think there was a Kansas win in there, and then one more conference win. So 2015, this is you made the return trip to Arkansas. 2014 is when they came and ran all over you. That was one of our honorable mention worst losses. Return the favor the following season, 2015. Patrick Mahomes, Devin Lauderdale, Jakeem Grant, Reggie Davis, DeAndre Washington. Your skill players all over the field just had their way. This is also the game where Cliff Kingsbury got a little salty in the post game and said that Brett Bielema just got his ass kicked.
Yes. In reference to...
And that was fun. So Brett Bielema had come down to the Texas High School Football Coaches Association, like, summer conference, whatever, and says, if you don't play with a fullback, you'll get your ass kicked. If you don't run the ball so many times, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Kingsbury's like, well, we just kicked his ass.
Yeah. So they, and Kingsbury had that planned, obviously, because I think he was out in a different suit, complete with, if I remember right, there may have been a flower.
I think it was the first time the flower made its appearance.
I think there was a flower because he seldom wore anything but a black long sleeve Under Armour Texas Tech shirt, much less on it at an away game. But he was dressed to the nines after that one. That game meant a lot to him.
He's ready to go.
And it felt good. It felt really good, especially after just seeing them demolish us at home. And I was so worried going into Fayetteville. I really thought Tech didn't have much of a chance. And I mean, they completely proved me wrong in that game.
Mm-hmm. This was year 2 of Patrick Mahomes. He only had 4 incompletions on the night. He went 26 of 30 for 243 yards, 1 touchdown. 2 of his incompletions were interceptions. So only two passes he threw hit the ground all night.
So 28 out of 30 passes were caught,
basically.
We could word it that way.
Jakeem Grant was perfect on the night, 1 for 1 for 72 yards and a touchdown.
100
QBR.
Man.
He had that really, really interesting trick play that I did a post game, like X's and O's post on this, where it was a quick no huddle run up to the line after the previous play where Devin Lauderdale actually lined up as the left tackle, who was your receiver, and they moved the extra tackle over to the right side to give Grant some extra blocking on that side. So what happened is Grant went in motion, Mahomes handed it off to him or threw it to him, I can't remember exactly, and then Grant looks up and hits Reggie Davis running down the sideline, who was wide open because Arkansas bit so hard on it. This is also when you get the reaction shot of Cliff Kingsbury, like, celebrating pointedly, staring across the field. Like, he's not sitting with any players. He's basically looking at Brett Bielema like,
see,
you suck. This is a game that Patrick Mahomes really kind of emerged as a dude.
Yeah,
in 2014, he had started to come on, and like he had been starting, he was replacing Davis Webb there towards the end. Patrick Mahomes rushed for 2 touchdowns in the game, 10 carries for 58 yards. He had a play where he threw a block in it.
I remember that.
Which got you all kinds of pumped up.
Yeah, he had a 21-yard scamper.
The same group of running backs that just ran roughshod over you the previous year, you held them to 228 rushing yards. You rushed for 171 yourself. You rushed for 6.3 yards per carry. They rushed for 5.3. So you didn't really stop them on the ground, but you outpaced them in terms of average. You scored more touchdowns on the ground than they did. Alex Collins, Raleigh Williams, Brandon Allen, those three guys just ate you alive in 2014, where they had, you know, those two guys had 200 yards each. This redemption felt really good in 2015.
It felt great. There were some,
on the road.
Yeah, some off-field stuff fueled by Kingsbury and his quote-unquote feud with Bert. And it was really sweet. This was a great win. And early in the season, and it was your big non-con Power Five. And so it was nice to just get that out of the way and go up 3-0 heading into conference play.
Oh, it was a fantastic win that weekend. So following that is when you hosted TCU and lost 55-52 on that tipped pass in the end zone. So that was the very next week.
Gosh, that hurt. I was there for that one.
I was in Hobbs and Thawne, the ceiling fan, if you remember. And then I want to touch on a conference game later on in this season. Saturday, November 14th, you hosted Kansas State, and you whipped them pretty good, 59-44. I hesitate to mention this, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
This 2015 win was your last home win versus a conference opponent not named Kansas.
Yeah.
So all of 2016, 17, 18, you've beaten nobody at home except for Kansas. No home conference game. Over the past decade, just to kind of rip, like I said, I still found plenty of negatives going through these best wins. You had seven home conference wins, not versus Kansas, in this decade. So from 2009, 2019... I don't know your total home record versus Big 12. I know that seven of these wins were against conference opponents at home, not named Kansas. Before this game, you didn't win any home conference games in 2014. Before this one in 2015, you had two, TCU and ISU, Iowa State in 2013.
Right, which we just discussed, the TCU game.
You had one in 2012 versus West Virginia, none in 2011, one in 2010 versus Missouri, and then two in 2009, Oklahoma and Kansas State. So, a 59-44 home game. You came out, you became bowl eligible. You were 5-5 coming into this game. Kansas State was 3-5. DeAndre Washington had himself a day. He rushed 27 times for 248 yards. 9.2 yards per carry, three touchdowns. He had that long of 80 yards where he, like, there was a power play where the left tackle, LaRaven Clark, air quotes, he pulled. He came from his left tackle spot and then went up the middle as like a lead blocker.
Ooh.
And just trucked some dude. And then Washington gets around a linebacker who dives at him, basically just spins horizontal in midair because he dove for Washington, barely grabbed him, and then because of the momentum kind of spun him around, and then Washington outran the rest of the defense for an 80-yard touchdown.
Washington was incredible that year.
Yeah, he this is the year he ran for like 1,500 yards before he went to the NFL. You gave up only 123 rushing yards to Kansas State, which is a win. 123 yards to really anybody from Texas Tech is a win, but to Kansas State, who really liked to lean on the rush, was pretty good. You controlled their quarterback, Joe Huebner, 19 of 41
ooh,
for 289 yards, QBR 46. Patrick Mahomes went 33 of 42, 384 yards, three touchdowns. Washington rushed for three touchdowns. Mahomes ran for one. Stockton ran for one. So you scored eight touchdowns on Kansas State that day. Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
Mahomes had four of them.
Yes, he did.
I know. Previously, I think Kingsbury was 0-2 against Kansas State. I think that was his first and only win, as it will turn out. against the Wildcats.
Purple Kansas. And then we have one more in 2015 we're going to talk about. At Texas.
Yeah. How about that? How'd that one feel when it was... Are we still talking about that one?
No. My bad.
Oh, man.
Spoiler.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I forgot to move this one around.
Oh, okay.
Dang it.
Well, you may that may be one of the ones we talk about next week, guys.
Next time.
Just in case... Yeah, next time. In case y'all were wondering.
I need to update the notes document before I start talking. Good job, Spencer. So no, we're not talking about another game in 2015.
Yeah, yeah. Pretend that didn't happen.
We're going to jump ahead to 2017. It's quite a leap.
Because 2016 was rough.
Yeah, it was another...
So we'll just pass it. We'll just pass by it.
Was it 5-7 season, I believe?
We'll acknowledge its existence.
Yeah, we're going to skip to 2017. And we're going to talk about the win that extended Kingsbury's tenure as the Texas Tech football head coach.
That's right.
Last game of the regular season, you go down to Austin and you defeat them 27-23. This is that game where McLean Carter started.
Yes.
And then there's the post-game video that we see from Kingsbury in the locker room saying that he had a difficult conversation at the beginning of the week with Nick Szymanek, who had been the starting quarterback, but had decided to make a change. Szymanek supposedly told him, "I'll do whatever's ready for the team, right for the team." And then towards the end of the game, he came up to Coach Kingsbury and said, "You're running out of time." And that's when Szymanek supposedly came into the game. McLean Carter was not having himself. Like, he was struggling. And Austin, this was a game where he kept throwing challenging Texas's best cornerback. I think it was Chris Boyd. And there were so many passes to the left. There were like, "Oh, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that." It nearly picked off several times.
He had two picks, but
there could have been lucky. Several more.
He's lucky that it wasn't, at least four.
At least, yeah.
I think there were two that just somehow they didn't, Texas didn't come up with them.
So McLean Carter, 16 of 37 for 237 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. Nick Szymanek comes in 4 for 8 for 96 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Had almost a perfect QBR of 98.8. Szymanek did to Carter's 14.2.
Jeez.
This is one of the first years you got to see Sam Ehlinger for Texas. Little Jordan Humphrey also attempted a pass. Shane Buschel attempted two, and receiver John Burt attempted one. You were able to hold Texas rushing to only 116 yards.
Defense played really well this game.
You did not outrush them. You only had 62 yards. Quick math, you did outgain them in total yards, but barely. It was really close. Kiki Kuti had himself just an outstanding game. He went 9 receptions for 168 yards. TJ Vasher, 5 catches, 1 touchdown. This is when he got flagged for the horns down.
Yep.
That real quick flash of the horns down, and that little ref was just waiting for it. And then nobody else had any more than 2 catches. Cameron Batson had 1. Cantrell had 2. Stockton had 2. Wesley had 1. Whereas Texas had 14 different guys receive a catch.
Yeah, they had it pretty spread out.
This is also the game that Justice Parker intercepted the ball and then returned it 55 yards to seal the win in Austin. This would be your second win in Austin in back-to-back trips. Like I said, probably saved Kingsbury's job that year. Kirby Hokut said basically the opposite, that he wasn't going to base it off of one game, but had he lost this game and gone 5-7 for a second year, you probably felt pretty confident he would not have returned. Wins this game. Exciting Thanksgiving weekend game down there in Austin. You had the punting duel between Michael Dixon.
Oh my gosh.
Dominic Panizzolo.
I forgot about Dixon. I don't know how that
dude averaged nearly 51 yards a punt. He punted 9 times and averaged 51 yards, his long of 67 yards.
That's incredible. I love that we're talking about punting.
Yeah.
The dude was nuts. And really that was probably Panizzolo's best game or one of his best games. He really did a good job. I think he kind of elevated it knowing that he was going against the best.
He also punted 9 times for 400 yards, so he had a 44-yard average and a long of 53. Just because we're running late, running long here, we got one more honorable mention to bring up before we wrap this up for tonight. And it was last year.
Yeah.
It was a game that we watched over here at 23 Personnel North headquarters.
That's correct.
We had quite the group here. Keith Patrick. This is the first time I actually met Keith.
It might have been the first time I met him, too.
Yep.
I can't remember for sure.
He brought over his wife and little girl. And that, what did he bring? He brought a dish.
It was a tomato salad.
Tomato salad, yeah. It was not what I was expecting. It was pretty good. We all had like different things.
Is that right? Am I remembering that? No, it wasn't that. It was a fried okra salad.
Fried okra salad from, he got the fried okra from Chicken Express,
but I think there were sliced cherry tomatoes in it. I couldn't tell you my daughter's middle name, but I could tell you the okra salad
was fantastic
that Keith brought almost a year ago.
Yeah, LaBar was here. Yep. Chad Hasty and his wife were here.
Mm-hmm. Who else was here? We had queso, we had pulled pork, we had sausage, we had all sorts of good stuff.
That was also not that we did the post game instant reaction with like 6 people.
Yeah, and 3 microphones.
A little intimidated with having like an actual radio host.
Yes.
Be a part of it, but not like lead it.
Right.
I was like, don't judge me, Chad. I don't know what I'm doing. But no, so this is the game. You went up to Stillwater, beat them 41-17. This was a game where just Alan Bowman just really showed out. You just had fun start to finish. And it was, once you had your 17-point second quarter, like you felt pretty much in control like all night.
Yeah.
This is also the start where we were talking about the second half defense, the adjustments this season. Oklahoma State scored their last points like 4 minutes into the second quarter.
Right.
And it wasn't blanked for, what's that, 30, 40 minutes of game time.
Yeah. And it wasn't just this. I think we've talked about this too, or I hope we did, but this was the first year that you really saw these guys come out and battle in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they were down or whether they were ahead, they really battled and they really played. I mean, there's a couple of outliers in there, like the Kansas State game and the Baylor game. Those were just kind of garbage. but for the rest of it, I mean, these guys came out and they played. And this was a really good feeling game against, let me see, what number, let's see.
15.
They were number 15.
3-0 at the time.
Oklahoma State was way overrated because they had beaten Boise State. They'd beaten the crud out of Boise State. Who turned out to not be that great. But they were 3-0, and Tech hadn't won in Stillwater since ever? Or had they won in Stillwater?
It was at least before 2007.
Yeah. It had been a long, long time since they'd won there, and it had just been a long, long time since they'd beat Oklahoma State, period. The last time they beat Oklahoma State was in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big monkey to get off your back. As you said, Bowman played super well, and you could really kind of see momentum and hope turning our direction after the Ole Miss game where Carter went down on the second drive, I think,
mm-hmm.
and had to throw in Bowman just to get through the game.
And then you came back home and hosted Lamar and just
skunked him
77-0.
And then
that was a lot of fun to watch, but it was like meaningless because it was Lamar.
Yeah.
And then you hosted Houston the next week, and that was actually pretty fun.
Right. And you won that one 63-49 against a good Houston team. You were
and Bowman set like a freshman passing yardage record, had passed Mahomes for that record.
Yeah, and Wesley had the crazy 200 something yard receiving mm-hmm. game. I think he set a record, or a tech record at least.
Probably should have been on our honorable mention list.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, it's non-conference games. So it's a little.
It kind of skews a little bit. That was a really good win. But so then you follow that with this win, and all of a sudden you're 3-1 with your only loss to. Had an 11 a.m. kickoff against a Power 5 opponent, first game of the year,
and you lose your quarterback went down. Within
so you can kind of you're talking yourself into it, and you feel really good about it. It was a big win. It felt really big.
You dominated pretty much all our way around. You had 621 offensive yards. You gave up only 386. Both teams had two turnovers. You converted 35 first downs to Oklahoma State's 18, and then you controlled the ball. We joked about this while we were watching the game that Tech was employing a clock eating offense. Tech held the ball for more than 41 minutes of game time to Oklahoma State's 18.
It was a pretty masterful clock management game.
Which was also
it was well coached. So many things went right this game. Penalties. I think I just remembered that watching it last year. I've got to find it in the box score somewhere. I think we did a really good job. Tech did a great job with penalties, and I'm trying to find it. I'm killing time. They had 4 penalties for 25 yards. Oklahoma State had 8 for 73. And that was one of those things that we're still always going to be worried about our mm-hmm. penalties, but they were a non-factor in this game, at least for Tech.
You outrushed them by nearly 100 yards.
Yeah.
On almost twice as many attempts. So your average was about the same, but you ran the ball 22 more times than they did, which helps account for the almost 20-minute difference of possession you held over them.
Cornelius had more incompletions than he did completions. He was 18 of 38.
Mm-hmm. Bone was 35 of 46.
So. Still had two interceptions. I believe one of them was one of those crazy tip passes or something like that. But
there's probably an arm punt in there too.
Yeah, but it just, man, that win felt good. It felt so good. It felt unexpected, especially to win 41-17. You're going into Stillwater and you're thinking, hey, if we win, it's going to be down to the wire. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really tough. And then to just completely blow them out and not let them score in the last, 30 minutes of game time? I forgot. You looked that up.
It's
you
40.
Yeah. So it was a good win.
It was.
Felt good. Honorable mention, though.
Honorable mention. So I believe it's time to jump into some questions. What do you say?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. I'm ready.
Now, are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Who's in the box? Oh, what's in the box?
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it. Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
All right.
I'm ready now. I'm ready to answer some questions.
So ready for questions. I had a little fun creating these bumpers, intro, transitional stuff.
Yeah, we got to get up to date with our terminology here.
We do. All right. I have a lot of notifications from a back and forth with Rob Bro and Chad Hasey this afternoon. Chad Hasey tweeted out a picture of the Michigan State uniforms that are just straight trash.
Yeah,
he likes it, and Rob Bro didn't. I was like, I side with Bro on this one.
Oh yeah, I think Chad ironically likes it.
Yeah. All right. So Cooper Burnett, he sent us a couple of his honorable mentions. He includes 09 and 2011 Oklahoma, 15 and 17 Texas, 2012 West Virginia, 18 Oklahoma State, 15 Arkansas, 13 Holiday Bowl, 17 Arizona State at home. Every win over TCU.
Yeah, those always feel good. And those are always, those games are really interesting. They're always interesting games, even the ones
Arizona
we lose.
State?
Yeah. No, against TCU.
Yeah, there hasn't been
there's always something weird about them.
Except for 2018 probably was the least weird game.
No.
Except that it was like a Duffy start. And Sean Robinson like ends the game on that. Like he scrambled and fumbled the ball without being touched.
Oh, yeah. I guess you're, yeah, you're right. That one was just kind of an
But that was like a weeknight, I believe, like another Thursday night game. Anyways, honorable mentions, 2011 Nevada. That was a one-point win. It was a Seth Dagey, like, fourth down pass to Eric Ward to win that game. It was at home. 2014 Central Arkansas, 2014 UTEP. If using the word, the term best loosely, as in, quote, thank God we survived.
Yeah. Accurate.
For those last four, basically. Red Raider Reset, man. Who is the most under the radar impact player in your opinion? I'm going to stick with McLean Mannix still, which is strange because he hasn't done anything for Texas Tech, but his career at Nevada, I believe, right? He transferred to Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Speaks for himself. I think he's going to be able to slide right in and be productive here for Texas Tech. And just the way that I've seen David Yost use these type of receivers has me believing that Mannix could be primed for a big year. Do you have an under-the-radar guy?
Yeah, I do have an under-the-radar, and I'm not trying to be, hot takey or anything.
Ooh,
or
hot take.
No, I'm really not, but the kicking game, is about the most under-the-radar out of any of... any aspect of this off season. So, obviously they're going to be a big impact player. So, you know, Jonathan Garibay, he's a transfer guy that came in with some experience, but the other two kickers, Trey Wolf and Gabriel Lozano, were freshmen. So with Red Raider Reset Man asking, you know, most under the radar impact player, it's gotta be one of those three guys. It's gotta be whoever ends up being the kicker, because wow, we've seen how that can go when you have someone who is unreliable or who just can't make a 23-yarder. So I think that's going to be kind of one of those understated parts of the game that we're not really even going to know what's going on until it's too late.
Yeah. Which away game do you think we have the best chance for an upset win? So your away schedule this season is at Arizona, September 14th, so it's game three, and then at Oklahoma 2 weeks later, so you have a bye week on the weekend of the 21st. October 12th at Baylor, I think you have a pretty good shot at beating them, but I don't know if that'll be an upset. Probably. You probably won't be picked to win many, yeah, if any, away games. Kansas, October 26th, November 9th at West Virginia, and then November 29th at Texas. So of those, I think I like your chances the most against Baylor and West Virginia.
Yeah, I was about to say possibly West Virginia. You could potentially talk me into Arizona, but I'm really worried about the Arizona game. I honestly think out of those three, I feel like Matt Rule's kind of got a little bit of momentum in Baylor. They're going to be jazzed to have us at their stadium,
mm-hmm,
for the first time
since 2007. It's the last time we played in Waco.
That's right. And I'm going to have to go with West Virginia, even though I don't feel good about it, but that's, I think that may be the best chance for an upset win right now. Just looking at it, they've got so much turnover. They've got a new coaching staff. Tech could roll in there and really surprise some people, or West Virginia may have a rough year too. I'm anticipating that they will.
Then give me Baylor.
You're going to take Baylor?
I'll take Baylor. TW to T-Win 91. The UT win a couple years ago was fun. Little people, big world. That was that play where Jakeem Grant basically crouched behind the offensive line, hid behind him because it was such a big size difference, and then took
a fake
hidden handoff behind
fake
the
victory
line.
Formation, right?
And then it wasn't that. Like, Mahomes handed it to him, like rolled out to the right as if he was going to throw a pass. Jakeem Grant held the ball and then took off running to the left. That was a lot of fun. That play specifically was it's just one of those things where you see it called like,
how did that work? That'll never work again. That was incredible.
It took guts.
What was that? That could have ended poorly. Friend of the show, Rob Rowe, he threw his in there. He had best wins. 2012 West Virginia, 2011 OU, ooh, and then 2015 UT or Archie. Which those are all solid.
Of course.
Quality wins.
All right. Going yard.
All right. Do we have an intro for going yard?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay. I guess we'll still do it.
Hold on. Everybody, hold on.
Make you do a going yard intro on the fly.
I'm going to do it.
It's just how good you are. Consummate professional.
It's not going to work.
Nothing's going to hold you back.
No.
It's not going to work.
Not going to work. I don't know what these are. Okay. Yard is bouncing back nicely. Now that I've raised up all the sprinkler heads, the grass, shocker, is getting watered now. I didn't get a little bit of not sticker shock, but I got my bill from that time and I was like,
oh yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
I had 14,000 gallons, which is 2,000 gallons more than I had last July. I was like, well, I'm watering longer, but I was also had like a week where I watered every day because I was trying to get the grass back. So I was kind of anticipating that. Looking good. Back, baby.
That's good. Glad to hear. It's gonna look really great once the weather starts to get a little cooler. Everyone else starts dying, sensing that fall and winter's coming, and yours is still just going to be sitting there green and pretty.
Yeah, that break in the heat we had a couple of weeks ago really helped. It timed up right when I decided to do all this. I was like, oh, look, we got some rain, and I think we had highs in like the 80s.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It made no sense.
All right. Are we ready to wrap this up and go with what we learned?
I think so, yeah. What did we learn?
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right, that's our last little intro to what we learned. So, Michael, I'll let you kick this one off this week.
I learned something that probably a lot of y'all already knew, is that putting a 2-pound beef roast on the smoker just ain't worth it.
So explain what a beef roast is. I don't know if I've ever...
Well, just pot roast.
Oh.
You know,
why did you decide to smoke a pot roast?
Well, because when we went to the store a couple of weeks ago, there was a buy one get one deal, and so I told Allison, I was like, "Oh, freeze one of them," because I've been wanting to do this and just try to do a makeshift brisket,
like a mini brisket.
Yeah, just try to get the kind of the same feel of a brisket, but not take as long, and you know, not spend $70 for a cut of meat, and then you've got to have an army over to help you eat it. You got to freeze it right. All that stuff. I thought, man, maybe there's some way we can do just a small one on a cheaper cut of meat and kind of get the same effect. No, didn't work.
How'd it turn out? What does a smoked roast taste like?
Well, I had it. I really thought it was only going to take a few hours because it's small, 2 pounds.
Right.
But that sucker stalled. I had it on for, I finally just wrapped it after 3 hours. And I was worried about it getting dry because there's not as much fat content. So I also put a little reduced sodium soy sauce in there. All I seasoned it with was salt and pepper, you know, like you would a real brisket.
Like any true Texan.
Yeah. And so I just thought, man, this is going to be a great experiment. It's going to work out great. And it was at 155 degrees after 3 hours. Oh, my gosh. And so I wrapped it. Luckily,
foil or butcher paper?
Butcher paper.
Nice.
Luckily, I remembered to throw some sausages on around that time. So, because
if anything, you'll have something to eat.
Yeah, that was, and we needed them because I put it on at like 9 a.m, just leisurely got up on a Saturday and threw it on. I thought we would have this for lunch, even if it was terrible. Because that's why I wanted the sausages too. But I'm really glad I threw those on there because that was what we had to eat for lunch because the meat was not done. And I think I let it on there for another 2 or 3 hours, and it maxed out at 180.
No,
I was like, that's it. We got to pull it. This is ridiculous. And I sliced it up, and part of it was okay. Part of it was pretty good, but most of it was dry and not to be surprised. And I think the big takeaway here is just that was way too much wood, way too much time, way too much everything for a 2-pound little roast that we ended up, Allison ended up doing the good old standby that I've talked about on this show quite a bit is, whenever she has to deal with one of my briskets or something that didn't really turn out that great, she made a black bean chili, which is what she had to do with this. And it was great. That was really good. You got that smoky flavor in there. So it was worth it for that, but also no, it wasn't worth it.
This just reminds me, I need to smoke something again. I used a smoker last night. Actually, I warmed up steaks to do a reverse sear ribeye. But I want to get back and do like some barbecue. I think the last barbecue I had was at 4th of July when my brother-in-law smoked a brisket for the family for our tailgating the fireworks show at McKenzie. I haven't done like true barbecue in a long time.
That was only the second time I've fired up the smoker all summer, I think, because we've been using that Weber kettle so much. I did some fajitas the other night that were just fantastic.
It was interesting. So like I started the smoker and lit the charcoal for the Weber almost the same, because I know steaks are only going to take like 40, 45 minutes to come up to temperature on the smoker. And then I forgot that you're supposed to rest the steaks in between. So by the time I got the steaks back out there, like my charcoal was on the way down. So it wasn't as hot as I would have wanted. I didn't get not as hard of a sear as I wanted. Still great to throw steaks on top of like real hot charcoal. It was still really good. Woke up this morning still feeling like the meat. Overindulged myself on that steak, but it was so dang good. But yeah, I'm gonna have to do some barbecue soon.
Me too. I haven't decided what. I talked to my friend who lives in California, and of course they're into tri-tip and stuff, and he does that quite a bit.
I've heard about tri-tip. I've never had it. Gosh, I just rubbed my eye. My contacts about to fall out a bit. But
I had it once.
I haven't tried it. And
it's really good because you can legit cook like a brisket. And it's like a little mini brisket, or you can cook it like you would a beef tenderloin, 135 internal or whatever, and then just slice it and it's nice and pink and just kind of serve it like that. So I think that's usually how he chooses to cook it, because I don't think he's got a smoker. He's got a gas grill, but he was talking about that, and I thought, man, I think I would like to do that just because I haven't used my smoker in a while, and I feel like I'm feeling the itch. I feel like it needs to happen.
Yeah. All right. I think that'll do it this week for us on the 23 Personnel Podcast. We will be back in 2 weeks to finish our best wins countdown. We'll do our best three each. So we'll have 6 games. And then the week after that, 27th, we'll do our Montana State preview. For Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for joining us this week on the 23 Personnel Podcast.